And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Beddow. Thanks so much for tuning in as we're with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. A number of things that we will get into over the next 60 minutes. We're going to focus on Eli Manning today and some of his charity work, a big reason why he was the co-winner of the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award with Arizona Cardinals wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald. So we're going to give you a taste of what we don't really get to hear about more often than not with respect to Eli Manning. And then obviously we're going to get into a number of other Giants topics. We're going to get to your phone calls, free agency, the draft, whatever you want to certainly tackle over the next 60 minutes, as I mentioned. So it should be certainly an eventful program, and we appreciate everybody tuning in. Paul, how are we doing today?
Great to see you again, Lance. And, you know, yesterday, John and I were talking about the rankings of all of the Super Bowls. John Clayton of ESPN had put up a list of those. Thought that the game this past week was number one, and Giants over Bills in Super Bowl 25 was number two. Just give me a gut reaction. Do you really think that this game this past week was the best Super Bowl ever?
Well, I think the fourth quarter was certainly extremely eventful. I don't know if I would say necessarily about the entire game with respect to that, but we will get more into the history of the Super Bowl as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. But right now, we turn our focus to Eli Manning, who was named the co-winner of the NFL's Walter Payton Man of the Year Award with Arizona Cardinals wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald. And to get into more about Eli Manning's charity work, we are now joined by Bob Garrett, the co-CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health. He has worked closely with Eli Manning, as Manning is tied into the Hackensack University Medical Center Tackle Kids Cancer Initiative. And Bob is right now on the line with us. Bob, Lance Beddow, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. We greatly appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Lance and Paul.
Well, Bob, let's start off. I believe you were at the NFL honors ceremony in Houston when Eli Manning did receive notice that he was going to be the co-winner of the award. Given that you've worked so closely with him over the last few years, what was your reaction when Eli Manning was finally recognized for all of his charity work?
I was just thrilled. Our entire team was thrilled when we heard Eli was given this award. You know, what he has done on behalf of Tackle Kids Cancer, the program, the difference he's made with these kids, with their families, has been just extraordinary. So when we actually, you know, heard the award being announced and him winning, It was just an absolute thrill. You know, I've said to people that you can tell if somebody is real and somebody's not in what they're doing, and Eli is as real as they come. You know, I've watched him over the years. We've worked closely with him. The way he interacts with kids in the hospital who have cancer and cancer-related diseases with their families is extraordinary. I mean, he's a guy that doesn't want the cameras on him, doesn't want the microphones in the room. He wants to make those connections. Where he has the cameras on him and the microphone on him are events where he's helped us raise money for Tackle Kids Cancer. And with his help, in just a little bit over a year, we've been able to raise $4 million that'll go toward pediatric cancer research. So
it was just
an absolute thrill. I had a couple of my colleagues there, along with a couple of our colleagues at the New York Giants, and for the difference it's going to make for the kids, the families, and the world, you know, it's more important than any Super Bowl victory. I mean, this was huge.
Bob, I so often try to tell people on our program when the fans tune in about what Eli Manning does for those families and for those afflicted. I mean, I've seen it here at the Giants facility time and time and time again, just what he does coming off the practice field. You have the opportunity to see him in street clothes when he's going to these events on his own time away from the facility where, as you say, there are no cameras, there are no microphones, only at fundraising events. Could you share perhaps a story or two or give us an idea of what a visit like that does for a family, for a child, when Eli Manning walks down the hall of a hospital or walks into the room of a child and just lights that place up because, after all, he is Eli Manning?
I mean, I can definitely, you know, share my experience and what I've observed with Eli. First of all, when he walks into to a room with the child who has had cancer, who might have a bald head and it just hadn't gone through some treatment, not feeling well, in the hospital bed with their caregivers, with the families around, Eli walking in the room is like, it's just like magic. The energy that's in the room is amazing. You see an instant connection. He makes immediate eye contact. There's no pretense about him. What I love is that, you know, he devotes time to the families too, and
sure.
You know, when they come out of the room, it's not just the kids that are lit up and are seeing, you know, one of their idols you know, actually talk to them and make them feel good about themselves, feel good about how they're fighting their cancer, giving them the inspiration to move forward, but honestly the families too, and you know, half the battle is you know, the entire family getting together and doing this together as a team. And of course Eli knows all about team and teamwork, so he devotes a lot of time to the families because he recognizes that they're part of this team in fighting cancer. And then at public events, you know, it's just that same genuineness is there. People want to give money. I mean, he issued a challenge. It was called Eli's Challenge as part of Tackle Kids Cancer. He volunteered to quarterback that initiative. He embraced it with a passion. For, you know, he matched $100,000 for every $100,000 that's raised in the,
wow,
on the grassroots level. And so far, just since that challenge was issued, which is just a few months old, over $135,000 has just been raised from, you know, grassroots efforts. You know,
wow,
those could include high schools, middle schools, elementary schools doing fundraising, fire departments, police departments, Boy Scout, Brownie troops. They do bake sales. They do car washes. He's come to schools, to the classes. There's corporate events. There's triathlons, golf tournaments. You name it. He's been involved in a lot of that. There's been a lot of grassroots efforts here. You know, we're certainly very, very pleased with the corporate and the sports partnerships that have supported Tackle Kids Cancer. But, you know, when you see that kind of effort at the grassroots level, you know, $5 raised here and $10 raised there and $20 raised there, and Eli quarterbacking this, no pun intended, but he quarterbacking this initiative has made all the difference in the world.
Talking with Bob Garrett, the co-CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, discussing Eli Manning's work with Hackensack University Medical Center Tackle Kids Cancer Initiative. And Bob, what you just alluded to me speaks volumes of when you have a partnership with a quarterback who is a household name as well as an organization like the New York Giants. I mean, it can really take the whole charity work to whole other levels. And I'm curious, you know, since you've partnered with Eli Manning and the Giants, what has that done for Hackensack University Medical Center?
Well, you know, it's done two things on the awareness side, because of Eli's, you know, being a high profile person and really drawing attention to Tackle Kids Cancer and the need for pediatric cancer research dollars to come in. It's really put Hackensack, or helped to put Hackensack, further on that national and international map. As a matter of fact, we've received donations for Tackle Kids Cancer from all 50 states, from 7 foreign countries.
Wow.
And I think we're up to over 7,000 individual donations. Now Hackensack has a great name, a great reputation, but that wouldn't have been possible without the notoriety, the realness that Eli Manning brings to the table. So I think that's made just an incredible difference. And as I said before, in total we've raised, you know, over $4 million with Eli's help. And you know, in terms of the research, and I think that's really important also, you know, for your audience to know about. I mean, the research is important because only 4% of all federal cancer funding is designated for pediatric cancer research. So 96% is going for adult research. And that's great because, you know, there's a lot of adult cancers that are afflicting our society that are very important. But only 4% are going to pediatric cancer research. So spreading that awareness and trying to get more dollars raised toward pediatric cancer research is really important, because 20% of all pediatric cancers are still without a cure, and even the 80% that are cured have chronic issues that they're dealing with most of their lives. I mean, they have both physical and psychological and social kinds of issues that they're dealing with. So the money that's being raised, 100%, is either going toward the research or going toward the survivors of pediatric cancer and making sure that their lives are not only a healthy one but a full life.
Is there a particular initiative, Bob, that's on tap now that maybe you have an event coming up in the off season, or a specific item of research, or maybe a facilities type of thing that you guys are making a push for right now that we should know about?
Yeah, well, we are planning on some additional fundraising events. We have some great partners like the New York Giants that are helping us with these events. We also have some corporate partners like Modell Sporting Goods, ShopRite, Pepsi, and Aquafina, where sales part of the sales of some of those products are going toward tackle kids' cancer. We are going to be planning some additional events with Eli now that he has won the Man of the Year award. We've also partnered with Madison Square Garden and the Garden of Dreams Foundation.
Wow.
Which is also big, because that gets us into that New York audience. And mm-hmm. If you think about it, Madison Square Garden in some ways is the epicenter of the sports and entertainment world. And so we're happy to partner with iconic properties of the Garden like the Knicks and the Liberty and Radio City and MSG Entertainment. And we're hoping that Eli, through his continuing involvement with Tackle Kids Cancer, will help us on all of these events, whether we have an event at Madison Square Garden or at MetLife Stadium or at a Modell's sporting goods store. I think Eli's presence and his appearance will be huge going forward.
Well, Bob, I hope he's busy during the next Super Bowl, so don't count on him for that, okay?
Absolutely. And I have to say one thing is, when I was with him at the NFL Honors, I had the privilege of having a photo taken with him on the red carpet, and I'm only like about 5'9" so the photo was posted on Instagram, and Eli, being as tall as he is, he towered over me, so there were a few comments along those lines. But I'll take my picture with him anytime
yeah.
for Tackle Kids Cancer.
Well, Bob, I can relate to you as well. I'm in that barometer, so it's okay. You have numbers in that department.
Yes.
In terms of the recognition that Eli Manning has received for this award, and you know another side of Eli Manning that maybe the fans don't, the diehards who support the New York Giants. And when you look at coverage of the National Football League, Bob, how important is it for a player like Eli Manning to finally get some recognition and for stories to be highlighting what some of these players do in their time off as opposed to really what they do from an X's and O's standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, you think about our society today, and sometimes whether it's the NFL or other sports figures, and you hear some unfortunate stories that come out, almost on a daily basis. It's great to see somebody like Eli, who has such a great work ethic and such great values on the field and off the field, to be a real role model. And him winning this award, gives him that extra notoriety that, I think young people throughout our society, throughout the country, can really look up to and say, wow, that's who I aspire to be. That's what sports should be all about. I think, when you're in the public eye, you have a responsibility, to do your job well, but your job goes beyond, and in this case goes beyond, what you do on the field. It's how you conduct yourself. And but I tell you what, the NFL could not have a better role model than Eli Manning.
Yeah. Absolutely. Bob Garrett, the co-CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, kind enough to join us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Bob, before we let you go, if Giants fans or anybody watching this program wants to help out with respect to tackling kids' cancer, where can they go for more information? What type of contact info should they look for?
So we have a website. They can go to tacklekidscancer.org. And they can either donate directly, or they can join the cause and get some information.
Well, Bob, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Congratulations on your support with Eli Manning, and best of luck with this initiative moving forward.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. Bob Garrett, co-CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
You know, it's important for me, Lance, to get the word out about what Eli does because, again, I see it all the time. Being here, you do as well. And there are so many stories about players in the National Football League who may not always do the right thing. You know, TMZ can't wait to get a hold of whatever they can to plaster it all over the internet, and then it gets on TV, and before you know it, it's a huge epidemic of a nasty story. These kinds of stories don't necessarily get enough play, and I'm so glad that the league has decided, you know, to honor Walter Payton with that Man of the Year award, which has actually been in effect for a number of decades. I don't know when they actually started calling it the Walter Payton Award itself. But the Giants over the years have had so many guys like the George Martins and the Harry Carsons who have given so much back to the community. Eli's just one of a long list of Giants who I personally know have done so much for those unfortunately afflicted by whatever it is that they may have to go through. So I'm just really glad for us to get the opportunity to do this, and I'm glad that the league was able to put another face on this, because it just helps the positive reinforcement of the message that good things do happen with guys in the NFL.
Absolutely. And like Eli Manning, most of them don't want attention. It's just built into their daily lives and their regiments, and they go about their business, they support the causes, and nobody necessarily hears about it. So this is a way for the NFL to recognize that. And to answer your question, I just looked it up, goes back to 1970 that they've been handing out this award. Johnny Unitas of the Baltimore Colts,
he was the first one
to win it in 1970.
You know, And it's funny because I remember many, many, many years ago when George Martin was up for the award back in the, I want to say, late 80s. I think he was a finalist. I don't think he got it. And that was the first time that I had been aware of it, you know, because it didn't get a lot of publicity in those days. Of course, there wasn't Twitter.
And there wasn't an NFL honor ceremony, too, which
right.
is fairly new as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is one of those things where the new technologies of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and, of course, the whole honors blowout PR that the league does for the Super Bowl week truly is beneficial. You know, I'm always anti-Instagram and anti-Facebook and anti-all this other stuff.
Well, you're old school.
Right. But this is a case where it's really good because more and more people can know about these good things.
Absolutely, and we once again thank Bob Garrett for joining us in terms of highlighting what Eli Manning does off the field. He was recognized. It was very rare also that two winners were awarded this in terms of sharing it with Larry Fitzgerald, who also supports a number of good causes. And we should also mention Panthers tight end Greg Olsen, who is the third nominee, who also does
a
lot of good work.
By the way, from Wayne, New Jersey.
Yeah.
You know, so certainly kudos to him for even being a finalist, because I know him and his family have done a tremendous amount of things as well.
So we're going to open up the phone lines and move the discussion along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul, off the top, alluded to the conversation that you and John had yesterday with respect to the greatest Super Bowls. If you want to continue to chime in, if you didn't have an opportunity to weigh in yesterday, feel free to give us a ring. We'll also get to your tweets, hashtag Giants Chat. But let's open up the phone lines as we get things going here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. And Len gets us started in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Len.
Doing well, Len. How's things with you?
Yeah. Good, good, good. Listen, nice segment on Eli. And, you know, without knowing the other 30 nominees' records and what they did, I'm sure Eli's was, you know, was well-deserved, and it sure sounded like it.
Yeah.
I think I said this the other day, but it bears repeating now. You know, the fans of the Giants and the organization itself have been lucky to have this guy around, to have him part of the family.
No doubt.
I mean, maybe... you know, Paul, I don't know, you go back pretty far, too, but there's just maybe a top five most important player in Giants history. But we don't need to debate that, but again, congratulations.
Please don't, because there are so many.
Remember,
Len, did you, by the way, ever get to see the top 10 Giants of all time show that NFL Network put together?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
yes,
now, I had a big part in that show, and I was glad to be asked, and I felt very honored to be asked. And I had a problem with the 10. I'll be honest with you. I thought Harry Carson should have been a heck of a lot higher than he was. But I will tell you, it was hard because they told us, just let me digress for a second.
Yes,
Lance.
Well, whenever Len and you get into a whole dissertation, I move over to the side here and go back into my own world. So
when NFL Films had a staff together of course, old-timers who put together this list, and all they said to us when they brought in the panelists to comment on it, they wanted us to comment on each of their 10 selections and then maybe somebody who should have been higher or in a different spot or somebody who might have been included, but they refused to change their list of 10. They were going to be concrete about their 10, and all we were allowed to do was comment. We couldn't change it. And so I go in there, and I'm sitting down in the hotel in the city where they did all of our interviews and our spots, and I said, guys, Harry Carson is just way too low. You can't do this. And they were like, no, you don't understand. We told you we're not changing the list. Okay? We're not changing the list. If you feel that way about it, you can tell us about it, but we're not changing the list for you. So Harry had to stay where he was.
And just so you know, Len.
That was really, you know, some list. And, of course, someday Eli will be on that list and somebody will drop off.
It's a tough list, Len. It was tough.
I mean, there really have been a lot of great ones.
You could have easily gone 15 and still had an argument.
Yes. I think you're absolutely correct. And
well, you could have went 20 and you'd still have an argument
that show,
too.
And so. I remember seeing it a couple of times, Paul. And you know, the top 10. You know, you get down to 9 and 10, and you say, "Oh my God, I'm leaving so and so out." And it really is pretty tough. But you know, again, back to Eli. You know, great player. You know, model citizen, great employee for the Giants. And you know, we've been lucky to have this guy around, and you know, hopefully a few more years. Listen, I wanted to comment on the topic yesterday, if you will allow me to go back to yesterday.
Sure.
And the you know, the Super Bowls. You know, ranking the Super Bowls. And I'm going to come at it from a little different direction. I know you guys didn't agree. You're probably closer to where Clayton had the first Super Bowl for the Giants. But, wow, I mean, talk about important games in Giants history, changing the dynamics after all that we'd been through for that 20-year period of time. You know, I guess maybe you always remember your first, huh? But for me... You know, it's the 86 Super Bowl that just ranks right up. You know, ranks right up there for me. And I was lucky enough to be sitting in the stands that day.
Well, you know what, Len? I understand your perspective on this because there's always going to be a soft spot in my heart for that one as well. I mean, look, Phil Simms and the greatest postseason passing game in NFL history. How could you not feel strongly about the game? But let's be fair. The Giants destroyed the Broncos in the second half of that game.
Yeah.
That was not much of a game, okay? If you talk about the quality of the game, the competitiveness of the game, the drama of the game, the Giants steamrolled the Broncos in the second half. They had no chance at all of coming back and making that a game.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But let me put you on the spot, Paul. In terms of all the wins that you've seen from the Giants, regular season, postseason, et cetera, can you think of, and I saw the first one, I wasn't the first one because they've won eight, but, you know, eight world championships. I did see the one in 56. But can you think of a more important win in Giants history, Paul?
Well, you know what? If you want to be personal about it, Len, I will tell you when they beat the Eagles in the 81 wild card game, for me, that opened the door to the respectability again. Because up until that time, you know, the win over Dallas at the end of the season when Dinello kicks the field goal after missing, we all know what happened in that game.
Yes.
But Dinello boots the field goal. They got to wait for the next day when the Jets had to beat Green Bay to get into the playoffs, okay? That's always going to hold a very, very deep spot for me. And then, of course, they go to Philly, and Wally Henry has trouble handling the ball.
Yep.
And you know, Scott Bruner and company and Rob Carpenter helps milk the clock with a power running game. Power running game by Rob Carpenter seals the day. And the Giants actually – look, I'm going to tell you something, Len. I'm sorry. I know I'm getting old school here. But my father.
Thanks to Lance for letting us go.
My father, Lance.
You're lucky. I'm being nice today.
My father told me all these stories about, you know, Tittle and Gifford and Huff and Rosie Brown and Dick Lynch and all those guys in the 50s and 60s. And here I am as a young kid, and I'm growing up, and all I know is that the Giants finished 9-5 in 1970 when they lost to the Rams 31-3 in the regular season finale and cost themselves a wild card spot. And that's the closest that I had ever gotten in my young childhood to see the Giants sniff the playoffs.
Yes.
So you must understand.
Yes. Yeah, when now, Paul, let me. Yeah. You know, hey, Lance, give me another minute on this. This is really important.
The clock is ticking, gentlemen. Okay.
So when, I know you're going to remember this, Paul.
But when this, team, when this team went in the vet that day,
not for the playoff game, but the regular season game in Philly, late November.
Yes.
And the play that sticks out of my mind: the Giants pulled an upset. You know, the Eagles were. You know, fat and sassy, Harold Carmichael and that Jaworski and that group, and they were in first place.
Yeah.
Actually, the Giants won the game. They get to 6-6, and that really catapulted them. But there was a play in that game, Paul. I just remember it as clear as day. Jaworski's rolling out. Taylor's chasing him, and he throws a ball in the fourth quarter all the way across the field. I forget the first name of the Giants quarterback. Last name, Jackson.
Terry Jackson.
Yeah.
Number 24.
Ball and takes it back 60 for a touchdown.
Yep.
I mean, to me, I
hear
just kind of broke the spell, Paul. It broke the spell.
Well, I will say
this. One play.
I will say that play, Paul? Yeah, but here's what I will tell you. For me, in the 81 season, it was the win in Atlanta Fulton County Stadium.
Okay.
In the pouring rain, in the mud and the grime. Okay. And that, if you remember, was the Bartkowski Falcons with William Andrews and company. They were really, really good.
That was an overtime victory.
Yes. That was a great year. I tell you.
And that game.
We waited a long time. We really waited a long time.
Lance, that game.
And the one thing, you know, you started to mention some names with, you know, Dad was telling you. And here's a guy who was on that top 10 list and very high on that top 10 list. Who my dad always told me was one of the three best Giants he ever saw, and that was Mel Hine.
Yeah, I don't go back that far.
I didn't see Hine.
I'm stunned. I thought you'd find a way.
But by the time he told me at one time the three best Giants he ever saw were Mel Hine, Emlyn Tennell, and Lawrence Taylor.
You know,
and since
those are hard names to argue, Len.
Yeah, put those three on the top of the list.
They're hard names to argue. Rosie Brown was number two on that show.
Yeah, Brown
and I had no problem with that.
The names are, I mean, these guys, unbelievable. which brings me to the Hall of Fame, and let me transition to Lance for a second. Lance, Warner and Anderson, I think they each played one year with the Giants. And I was trying to think back, and I don't know how I can get this list, but there were probably a number of other players who put in some time with the Giants, a year or two, went on to another team, came from another team, like Hugh McElhaney at the end of the 63 season, Paul. And McElhaney is in the Hall of Fame also.
Yeah.
I wonder how many players of that nature there are.
The Giants media guide actually has that list. They have a section of pages where they say these guys are Giants in the Hall of Fame, and those guys who are in those pages are ones who had significant time with the Giants who qualified basically because of their time in the blue. Then there's another page that has a smaller bio on each guy. For instance, like Larry Zonka. You know, who's in the Hall of Fame, not because of what he did with the Giants, but what he did with the Dolphins.
Okay,
you know?
So reference the media guide. All right, I'll check that out in the media guide. But good for Anderson and good for Warner. Not that they didn't belong. I mean, they were terrific players.
Absolutely.
One thing that surprised me about that Hall of Fame class, Paul, was and Lance, no offensive linemen. I mean, there were a couple of people who made it the finalists, you know, Faneca and Joe Jacoby. And but I was surprised that an offensive lineman didn't get in.
Yeah, well.
Listen, I was surprised that also a guy like Terrell Owens hasn't made it in either.
Wow.
I mean, putting aside all of the off-the-field issues, too. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's top 10 in the three most important criteria to determine whether or not a wide receiver belongs in the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, Len, I think we could certainly have a big-time debate about some of the other guys who probably are deserving to get in outside of offensive linemen. But I will leave you with this, Len. Kudos to you for finding a Giant that Paul was a bit speechless about and could not go back into the archives and actually give a dissertation about. So I think we got to let you go on a high note, only because I don't think you can top that when it comes to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Len, I got one question before you go.
I really appreciate
one question.
Time,
one question before you go. Katkavich, Hall of Fame or not? Should he be?
I missed the name, Paul.
Jim Katkavich, yes or no?
Boy, right on the edge. He was awfully good. Well, Robustelli's in. I don't know. Can you get two defensive ends off the same team in the Hall of Fame?
See, that was always that was a pet peeve for my dad.
Katkavich was good.
My dad thought Katkavich should be in. And, of course, Mr. Mara, Wellington, always believed that Charlie Connolly had gotten snubbed, that he should have been in also.
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely.
Great to talk to you, Len.
You know, if there was a guy who, for many years, Paul, took abuse – in that market up there in New York, it was Charlie Connolly.
Yeah.
But 58. You know, what can you? I mean, he was spectacular. And
here's the problem: he and I could go on for about 6 hours.
Yeah, well, that's why. I mean, there are other
Len,
calls.
Len, we got more calls.
Yes,
Paul, Len, we'll
Len,
talk to you.
You're
Len,
a big
we...
fan, and I am too. A terrific player, and anybody who saw him would know that. And
all right, Len.
You read about Unitas. But the one thing that sticks out of my mind that made Unitas great, that overtime championship game in 58 and that last drive, Paul.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
All right, Len. Appreciate the phone call. It was nice reminiscing, and we will certainly hear from Len again. Hopefully not too soon, because we may not have the rest of the program to work with.
I'm sorry.
With that being said, I do want to get to the next caller, because not only has he been waiting a while, but he's also been waiting across the pond, and that is Jay in England.
Wow.
Jay, what's happening? Welcome aboard.
What's going on? What's going on?
Hey, Jay, how are you?
How are we doing, Jay?
I'm doing all right. So listen, I'm going to kind of ask a couple questions. First of all, I think y'all should just add Len to the show. Because Len could just have his own segment. Him and Charlie can probably go back and forth and just have a segment together with you guys.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we want to give Charlie his own segment.
No.
Len, I could get behind a little. Charlie is in a whole other stratosphere. But anyway, what else you got for us, Jay?
So listen, and this is kind of a two-part question. If Eli Manning was to go through the same situation that Tom Brady went through with the whole scandal, the whole Deflategate scandal nonsense, whatever have you, how, as Giants fans, how would you guys receive that?
If Tom Brady, you're saying, let me just clarify this.
You mean, had he been the player instead of Brady involved in this? Is that what you're saying, hypothetically?
Right, if it was Eli Manning, if Eli Manning was in Tom Brady's situation with the Deflategate scandal in a playoff game, as Giants fans, how would you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I'm only going to give you my personal opinion. My personal opinion with respect to the whole Deflategate situation is, you know, regardless of what you believe or what you don't believe, you still don't know 100% how much it impacted the game, if at all there was an offense that was committed.
Right.
So if I substitute Eli Manning for Tom Brady, my thoughts wouldn't change. It would still be, okay, we've heard this side of the story, we've heard that side of the story, but you can't tell me 100% how much it impacted the game. So did the quarterback have a significant advantage, or did he not? And nobody can answer that 100%.
Right.
So my feelings would remain the same. You could take any quarterback and substitute it with Tom Brady. It wouldn't change how I look at it.
Yeah, and quite frankly, you know, to be honest with you, it's obviously a crazy hypothetical. I mean, I don't think Eli Manning is of the character to even – talk about in the same situation as Tom Brady. But here's what I would say to you. My problem with the entire episode is that I don't believe that the league had controlled the footballs enough anyway from the get-go. I thought it was a lack of security of the footballs being handled properly by the officials, which led to this opportunity that somebody could jimmy with the footballs to begin with. And so for me, my reaction would be, well, how does this happen? You mean to tell me they can't assign a guy to literally make sure that he takes care of the bag of footballs from start to finish of the day? That was my reaction, and it would be my reaction no matter what player was involved.
Well, and the other thing I'll add to that, Jay, and then I'll let you continue is, because you're bringing up rules and regulations, what it's important for anybody to understand, no matter what side you look at it from, based on the rule book, the league allows a wiggle room area when it comes to how much PSI should be in a football.
Correct.
I don't know if a lot of people understand
and
that.
And they get rubbed up also.
Correct, exactly. And I think I don't know the number. I think it's 12.5 to 13.5 or 12 to 13.
Yeah.
But there is an area. So what that means, Jay, and that's why I think it's important to clarify this, you could be a quarterback and you could say, you know what, I want my footballs at 12.6 if we go by my barometer. And then you can have another quarterback that says, you know what, I want my balls at 13.4. So you're going to have fluctuation depending on how quarterbacks like their footballs. But by the league allowing the wiggle room, people need to understand there's not one PSI measurement that the league says every football needs to be at. And I think that gets lost in translation within the conversation about Deflategate.
That I did not know about.
Yeah, that's it. If you look it up, it's in the rule book.
The rules to see if this was even legal, see what was going on. And the reason why I asked that question is because with the history of the Patriots and everything that's happened in the past with cheating or whatever have you, whether you believe it or not, going back to the Super Bowl that happened 2 days ago, Tom Brady solidifying his legacy in the NFL. And I hear a lot of Giants fans saying that, well, this bodes well for Eli's legacy. And I really don't truly believe that it has anything to do with Eli's legacy, whether he won those two games or not.
Well, Jay, I'll tell you, let me just jump in here real quickly, and once again, I'll let you continue. I think the people who are using that argument, this is my interpretation, I think they're coming from the fact that if the Falcons won, then you'd have another team that beat the Patriots dynasty on the biggest stage. Whereas by the Patriots winning, the Giants, I don't think this really has to do with just Eli Manning, because remember, the Giants beat the Patriots.
It has to do with Tom Coughlin also, over Belichick.
It's more about the Giants are still the only franchise that has beaten this Patriots dynasty on the biggest stage. So that's where I think they're coming from. I don't think it's really from any other angle.
Is that something you want to hold on to?
Say that again?
Is that something that we want to hold on to? Is that something that we should be – I don't know. I personally don't feel like that's something that we should be proud about. And the reason why I say that is that I – the reason – and I know, Paul, you're probably upset. But the reason
I'm not upset. I do think it is a small feather in a franchise's cap. I think they should stand on their own merit and be proud of what they've accomplished by themselves. But it's not a bad little piece of polish on the bumper there to say that they were the only ones to knock off Brady and Belichick. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Is that going to factor in Eli Manning Hall of Fame bid?
I don't think it needs to. I think he gets it on his own. He doesn't need any special stipulations to get into the Hall of Fame. Eli Manning's going to Canton.
Well, and I don't think you should get into the Hall of Fame based on the caliber of the team you beat. I think it should be based on your individual resume. So whether they beat the Buffalo Bills, the Dolphins, the Patriots, to me it really makes no difference.
Eli's done what he's done.
You have to look at his numbers and determine that.
His record is good enough to go in, and regardless.
Well, I agree his record is good enough to go in. I was just saying that based on the history of the Patriots, what happened with Eli Manning and the Giants and the two Super Bowls that we won, and Brady establishing his legacy right now, Brady going out as probably the best quarterback to ever play the game, and some fans want to put an asterisk over his name, some fans don't, it probably would, I personally think it wouldn't have an effect on Eli Manning. Well, the question is, would it have an effect on Eli Manning's legacy? And I don't think it would.
No, I don't think it would either.
I would only say this, and Jay, we'll let you go. I would only say this.
Yeah.
I believe that beating the undefeated Patriots and wrecking their chance at entering the history books by going 18-1, I do believe there is definitely significance in that victory, because you're talking about immortality for the Patriots, and they're knocking on the door, and Eli and Tom Coughlin took that away from them. I do think there is a bonus to that particular game. Now, whether or not, you know, if the Falcons had won the other day and so another team would have beaten them, I don't know that that's that big a deal. Like I say, it's kind of nice for some people to talk about. But I don't think you can disrespect or undervalue the fact that they made the Patriots go 18-1 that year. I think that's a big deal.
Well, I would say, though, everybody on the team benefits from
it.
I don't think it's just Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin. Anybody who was on that team.
Absolutely.
That's a feather that you can add to the cap.
But if you're going to be in the Hall of Fame room and you're going to be having an argument over guys who are finalists and guys who deserve to be in, when those names come up, when Coughlin comes up, when Eli comes up in that room, you know 18-1 is coming up in that conversation.
Meaning if you had to have a tie or something like that, where you can maybe
it's going to come up in the conversation.
It should. I mean, listen, it's part of the individual achievement, but I always say what gets lost in the conversations is, and this is just my pet peeve when it comes to football, and since you're old school, I would hope you would agree, but we'll see. The one thing that I don't like when it comes to analyzing football players, specifically quarterbacks, is quarterbacks' records against other quarterbacks.
It's a team game.
I can't stand that.
I
Tom
understand.
Brady doesn't beat Eli Manning. Eli Manning doesn't beat Tom Brady.
Like the Manning Bowl. Peyton wasn't playing Eli. And there was so much hype over
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing
you.
The
I'm
defenses.
That's
Tom
okay.
Brady had to solve the Giants' defense. Eli Manning had to solve the Patriots' defense. That's the one thing that always irritates me when people try to break down individual records.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, good. So now we can move on from that. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Travis is in Queens. Travis, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, how you guys doing, Lance?
Doing well, Travis. How's things with you?
Hi.
Good. And overtime, you and Lynn had, it was pretty good. You guys was going at it.
You know, I know that there are probably some folks out there who are 30 years and under and have no idea of what we were talking about. And I do apologize. But
no,
you know what?
I was loving it. It was
the history of this franchise is extremely important. Let's put it that way.
I was loving it. But I was cool, man. I got like 3 points I want to make real quick. One about Tom Brady. I think, you know, it's like a fresh wound. So, of course, everybody is going to label him the best of all time. But I don't think that's true. I think you know, you can still put him in the top five. And my reason being is because when you look at the last four appearances that he had at the Super Bowl, he was outplayed by the other quarterbacks and the defense up to a certain point. And you could also make the case that the last two the last Super Bowl that he's been in, you know, the Seahawks and the Falcons gave him the game.
Travis, I wouldn't go that far. Listen, Tom Brady's last two fourth quarters in the Super Bowls against the Seahawks and the Falcons were pretty impressive. If you look at what he did to rally both of those teams. And, you know, to say that if the Seahawks run the football with Marshawn Lynch, Brady doesn't get a Super Bowl. Yeah, but once again, as I said earlier this week, you need to give credit to Malcolm Butler and Brandon Browner for making a great defensive play. And if Tom Brady doesn't throw some of those touchdowns in the fourth quarter, they're not in a position to take the lead and put pressure on the Seahawks. So, I mean, I wouldn't downgrade that victory.
You know, and honestly, and let's be totally honest about it, especially with the quicksand of parity that the NFL has become. I mean, look, every Patriot fan could talk about the smidgen that Brady was off on his pass to Wes Welker in the Giants' second Super Bowl when Welker couldn't pull it in. And, oh, my goodness, did the Patriots give the game to the Giants?
That's a great point.
Because they didn't convert
that play.
Because
they could run out the clock if perhaps
Giants
Welker
never touched
the
ball.
That's a very
fair
point.
Eli to Manningham never happens.
Yeah. Well, and I'll go even further back.
If that play's complete.
Well, what happens if Asante Samuel makes the interception, perhaps, before the David Tyree catch, too?
Well, you know, I think that was a harder play than many people think.
But I think there's examples. Your point is there's examples in every game that all of a sudden momentum can swing.
I guess what I'm saying to you is this. The truth is that the way the game is today, and because things are so close, you know, John asked me this the other day for a taping that we're doing for the web, one of the questions that we do. And I really think the following three things have to happen for a team to be able to pull out a comeback. I think the first thing has to happen is you have to have some coaching missteps by the team that's ahead. They've got to open the door for you by making some not-so-great decisions. I think that does have to happen. You have to be able to out-coach the team that's ahead of you in a given period of time. Then you have to out-execute them, because no matter how badly you may out-coach them, if your players don't execute, you're not going to come back. Then the third thing that has to happen, you need a little oregano on the pizza, like I like to say. Because if Lady Luck doesn't come along and give you a little sprinkle of oregano, like Tyree's catch, like Edelman's catch, guess what? All the coaching and all the execution won't make it happen. You need a little bit of luck in there, too. And when you get all three, you get that lunar eclipse, and the sun gets blocked out, and you get the comeback, and you win the game. But if you don't get all three, chances are you fall short, and the other team winds up walking home a winner. That's just the way it works.
No, it is, and you guys are absolutely right. But my argument to you guys is, you take those two calls versus the Welson Walker and the Antoine Samuel those were 50-50 balls. We're talking about the ball on a half-yard line to close the game out. He just Lynch, he just ran 5 yards down there. So the percentage of winning for the Seahawks at that position was greater than the percentage if Wes Walker would have caught it and then probably Patriots win or Samuel could have caught it and the Giants lose. Now versus the 2 days ago to the Super Bowl, you know, they're in field goal range. So if they run the ball and let's make the argument that they don't even advance to a first down, but it becomes 3rd and 8, they only get 2 yards or 3 yards.
So they're still within field goal range.
Right. So the percentage of them making that field goal, they're 13. So you have the Patriots beat.
I know, but you know what? As long as we're going to go hypothetical, and I know the odds were very long that this would have happened, but what if Matt Bryant had come in to kick that field goal, it got blocked, and somebody picked it up from the Patriots and ran it back the other way for a touchdown? Then what would you be saying?
Yeah, you just don't know.
You don't know. You just don't know.
You don't know. And here's the other thing, Travis. You know, a lot of people tend to forget Atlanta ran the ball on first down. Devontae Freeman lost a yard. Now, I'm not disagreeing with you that they easily could have then run the ball on the next play, but I don't think Kyle Shanahan, their offensive coordinator, is thinking, well, Matt Ryan's going to drop back. He's going to get sacked. And then all of a sudden, Jake Matthews is going to be called for a holding call.
I don't think he's necessarily thinking
that when they go through the process of determining how they want to try to wrap up this
drive.
That
was a case right there, though, of bad play calling, foolish play
and
calling.
And I'm not disagreeing with you.
And then better execution by the Patriots. And you know what? I'm giving them credit because ultimately, no matter what the other team does to shoot themselves in the foot, you still have to take advantage of it to win the game.
Of course.
And that's the case in every single football game, every single Sunday. You still have to take advantage of it because no matter how much a team may want to give it to you, if you don't take it, you don't win.
Well, and that's why I go back to Travis. Even after all of that, and you criticize maybe the Falcons for not running the football, Brady then still orchestrates 2 touchdown drives where Atlanta's defense held New England to 1 third down. One third down. So Brady had to earn that. Regardless of
no
whether
question.
You think it was a gift-wrapped opportunity, he still has to then solve that Atlanta defense and get 2 two-point conversions. Let's not forget about that. So,
all right.
Thank you. We'll talk to you again.
All right, Travis.
Make 2 more points.
Real quick.
All right. One. Do you think that for the Patriots and the whole, do you think, like, you know, the Spygate and the Flategate should be something that we should, you know, put next to them? And also, I think the Giants going forward to get back to the Super Bowl, I think they will have to get depth at cornerback and focus on the offensive line. And that's it.
All right, Travis.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
I would say
thanks so much for chiming in.
No asterisk for Deflategate, as far as I'm concerned. That had nothing to do with them winning the game. So their championship this year is free and clear. Brady served his suspension. They did what they had to do, and they won. And as far as the Giants improving the roster, look, would they like to upgrade the back end of their quarterback depth chart? Their 4th and 5th corners? Sure, would you like to do that? But that's not a priority. Offensive line is much higher priority than the cornerback is.
I would agree. And I think that some of the options who are on the back end who are potentially going to be free agents, you know, you could still bring back, and I don't think you need to necessarily break open the bank. You know, a guy like Leon Hall, who showed versatility at 2 positions, Trevin Wade. I mean, they could certainly look to bring in another young guy like what Eli Apple did, but, you know, you're good, assuming everybody is good health-wise. Eli Apple, DRC, Janoris Jenkins. That trio.
And with Collins and Thompson expected to be your starting safeties, I don't know too many people who would not want that secondary.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just me speculating. I'd be very surprised if there's much to change or a major revamping in terms of the secondary. If there's one facet of this team that I think is good to go entering next season, it's the secondary, Paul.
Yeah, I mean,
I would not be playing a game of musical chairs there. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. This guy I probably would play some musical chairs with. Charlie's in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Charlie, how are you?
Hey guys, did I hear my voice? Somebody call my name because
unfortunately, somebody recommended, and you know, I don't know if they were necessarily thinking straight that perhaps maybe we should consider giving you your own segment. But We're going to have a big meeting of the minds before we even consider that.
Yes, I know you would. Hey, Paul, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Well, not a question, but you guys were talking and about Super Bowl in 1990, Super Bowl, and you were talking about, like, if Phil Simms played. Well, you know, we had two starters that didn't play that Super Bowl. We also lost Rodney Hampton,
yeah,
who was a monster.
Yeah, but, you
time.
Know, to be fair, Charlie, I mean, Otis Anderson was just, I mean, as seasoned a pro as you could possibly want. And I understand what you mean, but the year before, Otis had been comeback player of the year, had run for 1,000 yards. You know, I mean, you know, putting Otis in wasn't exactly a stretch. You know what
no,
I mean.
No, but Hampton, I mean, even Howard Cross said on a show, I don't know when it was, but he said that if Rodney Hampton was in there, you know when Otis Anderson wound up and, like, got the guy with a stiff arm?
Yes.
I forget, Kelso,
yes.
Or what was his name?
Yeah.
But he said Hampton would have knocked the guy over and gone for a touchdown. He said that's how powerful Hampton and his stiff arm was. So I think if Phil Simms and Hampton played that game, that Super Bowl, that game wouldn't even have been close. We would have killed the Bills. That's what I think. But we didn't
wow.
have them. We didn't have Phil, and we didn't have Hampton.
Will you take the win anyway?
Oh, of course. I take the win. And that's the other thing too. Is like I'm really upset. I think Phil Simms is a Hall of Fame quarterback. The stadium that he played in, which you know, the wind that he played in, the cold that he played in, and then having a coach as Parcells that he played with, that guy was a Hall of Fame quarterback. And I don't understand why he hasn't at least been a finalist or in the, you know, 20 top 25. I mean, to me, I think he is a Hall of Fame quarterback. I mean, when you're playing in those two conditions, I mean, Dan Marino played in Miami.
Yeah.
Elway played in Denver. You know, I mean, I think you have to take that in consideration where people play. Kurt Warner played in a dome most of his time. I mean, Phil Simms played in friggin' New York in the old stadium, and the winds and the weather was horrific.
Charlie, look at the scheme that he played in. Look at the receiving
yeah.
cores that he had. There are so many reasons why you could argue for Phil, and I happen to be with you. I think that when Phil retired, I thought he was a Hall of Famer. Now, the problem is, as years go by and all of these quarterbacks are playing video game football, their stats are dwarfing yeah. Phil's, and they're going to make it impossible for him to go. But here's what I would say. You're asking me legitimately, why was Phil snubbed when he became due for the Hall vote? And I'm going to tell you why. First of all, there's an anti-New York bias. That's what made Harry Carson wait so long, which was a joke, but he had to wait forever to get in.
Yep.
There's an anti-New York bias. There are voters who held the second Super Bowl against Phil because Hostetler did have to come in and finish the season and then won the postseason games to get them the second Lombardi Trophy. So they all forget that Phil was outstanding in getting that team into position, but they forget that. So that's the other thing they hold against him. The other thing that gets held against him, I believe, is a lot of people get very caught up in numbers. And if you remember, at the end of the 93 season, the last regular season game, the Giants played the Dallas Cowboys. And Phil Simms had a wide-open Mark Jackson in the left slot inside the 10-yard line. And Jackson dropped the ball.
Yeah.
He could have crawled in for a touchdown. It would have been Phil's 200th career touchdown throw. He wound up retiring with 199.
Yeah,
and I really believe that that touchdown is another reason, or the one that didn't go on the board is another reason he's not in. Because when they look at that 199, it's not 200. And we all know that people get caught up in stats and milestones. Phil lost number 200 thanks to Mark Jackson. And by the way, because the Giants lost that game in overtime, they wound up getting penalized because then they had to win a wild card game. Then they had to go out to San Francisco the following
yep.
week. The Niners yep. had been rested because they had a bye week, and the Giants got smoked by the 49ers. So that drop by Mark Jackson really changed a lot for the Giants, because had they not done that, had they gotten that win over Dallas like they should have, Phil Who knows? He might have gone to another Super Bowl that year, Charlie.
Yeah.
He might have gone.
They would have had home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
He might, and he might have gone to the Super Bowl. Phil might have had another trip.
Well, I think durability, though, is another factor, too, when you look at Phil Sims. That may hurt him a little bit in terms of staying healthy, having his seasons interrupted, and so forth. Something else that people take into consideration.
Yeah, although, and you know how I'm a big stickler for that.
Yeah.
But Phil was actually able to still play a long time.
He was.
Despite the injuries.
But people look at, you know, and I know Eli Manning is on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, but they also look at guys played 15, 16, 16, 15.
Yeah.
With Phil, it's a little bit more interrupted.
Anyway.
There's not that continuity and consistency.
Phil Parcells will admit that he made a big mistake when he sat Phil Sims.
Yeah, I know.
He went with, which was ridiculous. So,
anyway.
I still think the guy's a Hall of Famer, and I hope. I don't know how, maybe the old-time committee or something. And, hey, next time Len calls, you and Paul and Len, you guys could talk about Jim Thorpe because he played for the Giants, too.
He did. He had
a
cup of
absolutely.
Coffee. Right.
And then we'll revisit the roaring 1920s as well.
Charlie, I didn't see him either. I know you don't believe me, but I didn't.
I'll tell you. Well.
You couldn't see him. He was a great host. He was too fast.
Exactly.
Hey, guys, Charlie.
Have a good weekend.
Sounds good.
Too. Not even weekend yet, but anyways, have a good week.
You got it, Charlie.
Talk to you guys later.
Appreciate
bye
the
now.
Comic relief there at the end. All right, let's try to squeeze in Rod in Virginia. Rod, welcome to the program. What do you got?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to call and, you know, talk to you guys. And I just wanted to, because I saw some draft boards, and I know it's early, but I saw some draft boards, and some people were saying that Deshaun Watson might drop. And I don't know if that's a pick the Giants would want to take if he's there. I believe they should. But just seeing Eli and everybody saying Eli's in the twilight of his career, he might not be able to play anymore. But to me, Eli is my Phil Sims to what he was to my dad. So I love Eli. I will always love Eli. He gave me 2 Super Bowls. I still think he can play, especially seeing that game that he had against Philadelphia and seeing the game he had against the Ravens. And I really think he can play. I don't know if that's a pick, though, that the Giants want to take up.
Well, Rod, let me ask you this to counter what you're bringing up, and I'm not saying you're arguing for Deshaun Watson. Number one, do you look at this team right now, maybe lose a player here or there, could still compete for a playoff spot next year?
Of course.
Okay, so with that being said, then you, I guess, would be of the feeling that if you're going to draft somebody in the first round and this team is playoff ready, you want that player to come in year one and be an immediate contributor, right?
Of course.
So does a quarterback do that for a team that's playoff ready?
No, but
there you go.
You know, people. Yeah, you're right. But, you know, people say you got to take the best available right there.
And I'm with you there.
And, yeah, so if Deshaun Watson is there, I wouldn't mind the pick. But I'd rather have an offensive lineman, especially with the way Ereck Flowers played. He just played horrible this year.
Nice job. Offensive line. How young are you, by the way?
I'm 17. I'm 17 years old.
I love it, man.
Paul's doing backflips.
I thereby W old school. God bless you, my son.
Yeah, man. I love the big blues back because when I started watching football, I started watching around 2005, 2006. So I really love Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs and that duo that we had with them for those Super Bowl runs in 07 and 2011. So I want to get back there. I think we had a good start with bringing in Perkins and the way he played in those last couple of games.
Yes, sir.
I just think we need an offensive line. And I heard that a couple people was talking about maybe us picking up Adrian Peterson. I don't know how true those rumors are or how close to the truth those rumors are. But I don't know if we want to pick up people are calling him injury prone around these times, and he is getting older. But I wouldn't mind having him on the team.
Well, remember, Adrian Peterson is still under contract with the Vikings. He's not even a free agent. They're going to have to determine whether or not they want to give him the roster bonus. And that was blown out of proportion because of his interview on ESPN recently. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, Rod. But the Giants certainly, I would agree with you, have an opportunity to draft a playmaker in round one this year that could come in and immediately contribute. And that's, I'm sure, how they're looking at things.
Yeah, and look, anytime you can enhance the offensive line, you're not going to go wrong. That's the bottom line. Because, again, look at the playoffs. Look at all these teams in the playoffs, including the Giants. The teams whose offensive lines played well, especially in big spots, those were the teams that won those games.
Atlanta revamped its line, brought in Alex Mack. The Patriots got a third-round pick with Joe Thuney. They improved their offensive line play. They got healthy. I agree with Paul. It's no coincidence that the two teams in the Super Bowl they really honed in on their offensive lines this offseason.
And by the way, in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter, the Patriots' offensive line totally outplayed their counterparts on the Atlanta offensive line, which was a big part of the comeback.
It was a whole swing of momentum. That changed the complete...
It's the trenches, baby.
Changed the game in the fourth quarter.
Always believe in the trenches.
Yep. Rod, appreciate...
That's what I was talking with about to my sister, because, you know, she's a new beloved Giants fan. She started watching around 2010. So
good stuff.
She really started getting into it. So I was talking to her, and she's like, oh, this team is crazy. And we started talking about the Miami trip and all that stuff, and it got really heated. But I think this team...
Get her off of that stuff.
I think this team is so great. I think the only problem we have is the O-line. I think we could get some better linebackers, and maybe that's it. Re-sign Pierre Paul this year. But, yeah, besides that, our team is stacked.
All right, Rod. Appreciate the phone call.
You keep
Thanks
telling
so
her.
Much for chiming
keep
in.
Telling her. She'll get it sooner or later. You keep telling her. Good day to you.
All right, Rod. I can only imagine if Rod's sister was listening to the segment between you and Len. I'm sure she could relate to a lot of information that came out of the conversation, considering she's only 10 years old. I'm sure she appreciated that 1950s hardcore breakdown. Well, it was nice to reminisce on Big Blue Kickoff Live, but most important, it was also nice to hear from Bob Garrett, the co-CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, off the top of the show. We greatly appreciate him for joining us to tell us a little bit more about what Eli Manning does off the field, which, yes, is relevant because he did win the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, but it's also relevant even if he didn't win the award, because a lot of guys in the NFL do a lot of good deeds that just unfortunately do not warrant enough attention.
You know, Tackle Kids Cancer and Eli Manning, they've been up for the award, I believe, three times, and he got the award finally this time, co-winning with Larry Fitzgerald. I will also tell you, award or no award, Eli Manning was going to keep doing this for many years to come, because that's the kind of guy he is. He doesn't need the recognition. He doesn't want the recognition. But I will tell you, I do think the recognition will help bring more support to his cause, and that's a good thing.
And that full interview will be up on Giants.com in case you missed any part of today's program. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday, Monday through Friday at noon Eastern. We certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in. We'll try to get to some of your tweets off the air. But for Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com.